This is the Todd Capital Millionaire Podcast, Episode 9. This is Todd Millionaire, also known as Charles Oglesby. I'm the founder and the director of the Todd Capital Investment Club, as well as the Todd Capital Investment Club for Real Estate and Todd Ventures. And we have some great things lined up for you all through that Todd kind of infrastructure. And as we do that, we want to bring on more voices, more knowledge, and more wisdom. And today we have a special guest. His name is Al Pickett. I actually met him through Instagram and probably even some Twitter, but he's been a great resource, somebody that's been great to follow. He's shot me some book recommendations just through what he's posted on his Instagram, and maybe he's picked up some of mine. But I wanted to bring him on and talk to him a little bit about what he does. From what I've seen on Instagram, he does a lot of Forex trading. And I mean, me being a stock guy, I wanted to kind of talk to him about the difference between stock trading and Forex trading and just kind of dive into the benefits of both. So with that, how's it going, Al?
It's going great, man. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for the opportunity to share with people and hopefully provide some insight to those people listening.
Very cool. And what's your Instagram profile for it, really quick?
It's Mr. Al Pickett. So MRALPICKETT. So two T's. Just how it sounds.
All right. So I know you've been traveling a while, traveling a lot recently. But aside from traveling, what do you do for a living?
Professionally, I trade the Forex markets full time, and then I coach other people on how the markets actually work. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's currencies, commodities, stocks, interest rates. There's a methodology that is applicable to all of those. So I teach other people how to profit from them on a consistent basis as well.
Nice. I still don't get the Forex stuff, man. I've been trying to get a good grasp on it. How does somebody start trading Forex?
Most people begin by hearing, oh, you can make a lot of money in Forex, and then they just dive in, they open up a demo account, and then they just kind of dummy around, and they open up, put all these different indicators on and that kind of thing. My recommendation for how to do it right is to actually, and what I wish I had done on the front end of my career is get somebody to teach you, get an actual coach, not necessarily a friend, somebody with a track record. If that friend has a track record, okay. But get somebody with a track record to teach you how the markets work, no matter whether it's Forex or stocks or whatever. But that's the key to making less mistakes.
And why do you think that is?
Well, it's because, it's applicable to any field, whether it's a pro ball player, they need a coach. Without a coach, how far can you go? In the medical field or any executive level position, there's always that person that's over, who's guiding that person to their next level and helping them make less mistakes, and that person can always go to that person above them that's, the eyes, who have the experience, who have the eyes, who's been doing it, that say, when they run into a situation, what do I do with this, how do I think about this, et cetera, et cetera, versus you just being out there by yourself and just trying to figure it out, just winging it.
That's a good point. I was actually reading in, what was that book? It's .com secrets, and he was saying that you need to find somebody who's already doing what you want to do successfully and then model yourself after that person instead of just trying to go out there and wing it and critique yourself as you go along and make mistakes. So that makes a lot of sense. How much do coaches usually run?
The coaching that I have is $5,000, and it's for what it's worth. They invest $5,000 just in the coaching piece. What they need for investing in the markets and trading in the market is separate from that. Basically, I give them a 90-day guarantee in terms of teaching them and showing them. The concept behind that is, if I can't teach it, I don't keep it. So I've got 90 days to prove myself that, hey, this really works. You get a chance to decide if it's for you. And that kind of thing. So that's my approach to coaching.
And so I'm sure that if they're spending $5,000, they're making more than $5,000, right?
Absolutely, and that depends on also like what account size they start with. You know, somebody, I have people who I coach that may start with $1,500 in an account, and I have people who have started with $30,000 in an account. So how much you make, a percentage is a percentage, mm-hmm. and so how much you make is going to be dependent upon, you know, how well you grow that account from where it is.
Gotcha. But there's value in investing that amount with you. They're going to be able to have a skill that's going to take them for the rest of their life, pretty much.
Exactly. And that's the whole point. It's like, you know, five, if somebody would offer me the opportunity to pay $5,000 and have a guarantee on the front end, they're going to teach me a skill that's going to free up, number one, free up my time and then provide me an unlimited upside of income. Oh, man, I would have been all on it. It just didn't cross my mind to do that. I didn't see that out there when I started. And, it's just definitely worth doing, no matter the amount. Even if that amount had been $10,000, I think it's still worth it, you know, given what people pay for tuition, college tuition at this point, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, you know, for what it's worth, like the majority of those positions are going to give you a cap when you start. You're going to be capped at $70,000, $80,000, $120,000 a year. So.
Cool. So, I mean.
That's how I think about that.
So I'm not sure if you've ever read the book 4-Hour Work Week, but it's a book by Tim Ferriss. And essentially what he talks about is being able to work remotely. And I mean, just following your Instagram, it looks like you're living the 4-Hour Work Week life. You're lounging, you're in on a different beach every other day, but you're still working. So, I mean, can you tell us how you got to that? How did you get to that point? Where did you start? I mean, and can you just kind of tell us your story?
Yeah, so I read the 4-Hour Work Week. And it was, you know, for years, it was the staple for, I want to say when I was 24, somewhere in that range. I'm 36 now. But that's along the period that I had read that book and started implementing, you know, some of the ideas in my business and in my life, and saying, okay, you know what? What do I really want? Because at that point, I was running 24, 25. I was running a mortgage company, doing extremely well, but I had no. I was tied to a location. I was tied to the city that I was in. Then you have employees and you have, you know, that responsibility, that overhead. And Tim Ferriss's book really opened my eyes and said, wait a minute, I can do this thing a whole different way. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my financial advisor had gotten me a ridiculous return in 1 year. And that's the step where I said to myself, okay, wait a minute, if he can get, you know, 80%+ in a year with the capital that I have, and he's not even managing it per se, like he's not actively trading it, what can I do with it? And that's what got me started into trading. I just called him up and I said, all right, I need to learn this business because number one, I can do it from a laptop. I can be anywhere in the world. I won't have overhead. I won't have employees. And if I take the capital that I have and continuously, consistently get 80% a year, I'm going to do just fine. And so that's what I did.
And so did you start right in Forex, or did you kind of go stocks first?
Yeah, I started with stocks. And originally, kind of my approach in stocks was to just this was 2008, 2009.
This is after the crash.
So my approach was setting it.
This is after the crash, right?
Well, this is right when everything was crashing.
Okay.
March of 2009 was the pinnacle of the crash. And so at that point, my strategy was very, very simple. I would just look at the cash on the balance sheets, make sure the company had billions of dollars, and then I would look at public information. I would look at the officers. Look when the officers were buying and how much they were buying for, and I would just follow them in. Mm-hmm. And I'd do like ridiculous numbers, like 150, 200% in 3 days or 4 days. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
And then the market, you know, after they pumped all that liquidity in the market, sometime in March of 2009, the market just went on a tear, and it's just been going straight up ever since, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And so when did you make that shift into Forex, and why?
I want to say, I can't even remember. I want to say it's been 6 years. 6 years total. But I made the shift because number one, the biggest reason is leverage, right? So for every dollar I put up, I get control over 50. And with stocks, it's usually like one in three. So for every dollar you put up, they'll give you, using leverage, they'll give you an additional $3 to trade, to make profits off of. And so when you look at that difference, 1 to 50 and 1 to 3, that means you can, a professional can grow an account even faster. A rookie can blow an account even faster. So the losses can get bigger faster. Or the gains can get bigger faster. It's just, you knowing what you're doing and having a process, et cetera, et cetera. Luckily, I've never blown an account. That's one thing I'm very, very proud about. So, but that's why I made the shift, is I was able to do that. I didn't have to do a ton of scan in terms of finding the stock that's trending, or finding a stock to take risk on. Is because I could just look at a currency pair like euro US dollar or the British pound, Japanese yen, or whatever the case, and they were multi-directional, just in terms of when you short a stock, the probability generally is against you. When you go long on a stock, it's pretty much in your favor, right? Mm-hmm. But on currencies, it's equal, because it's just, Japanese yen is on one side, British pound is on the other side. The trend can go either way for any amount of time.
Nice. So, it sounds like you've had some success. You went from stocks to Forex. What are some traits that you think make somebody a successful trader or investor?
The number one thing that most people don't talk about is being solidly and prepared. That's by far the most. That's the number one thing you gotta have is to have that psychology piece. That means you're not thinking about how much you can make. You're not thinking about how much you can lose, or you're thinking about that how much you can lose, but you're not thinking about how much you can make. You're always aware of how much you can lose, but you're not. When you have a loss, you're not thinking about that loss and I woulda, coulda, shoulda, so that you can just move on to the next opportunity, because every trade is just one in 100 of the next trade. Like that one, so you got to put on another position after a position after a position with no emotional attachment to the results. And that is one of the strongest things that it'll make a for sure. Emotional attachment to the results will break you.
Nice.
For sure.
I definitely agree with that one, and that's something that I struggle with a lot. Sometimes it's easy to fall in love with the company or fall in love with the trade. And I don't even know how to really separate myself emotionally. I still do it to this day. So how do you recommend somebody get to that point?
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with process. And so foundation and process. And so what I teach people on the front end is objectivity. I don't care who the company, I don't care who the company is. It's just a number to me. It's just a ticker. It's just a number, and everything manifests itself in trends. So that one piece of the foundation, helps me not even, it doesn't matter how much I love Nike, and wear Nikes or whatever. I'm not in love with the company. I just want to, is it trending or not? Mm. Is it going up or is it going down? That's the only thing I care about. And that helps me separate, you know, my love for a company for my love for, is it trending or trending up or trending down?
So a question that I have for you, and this is a personal question, I'm not sure if a lot of people will get a lot out of this, but a lot of times I'll look at the trend and I'll see that maybe it's trending downwards. And the idea is that maybe it'll break that trend and pop upwards, or vice versa. If it's trending up, can it still carry that trend? And so maybe I should avoid it because it's too high. Do you think that you would still bet on that trend if it has kind of that trend heading upwards, even if it's just been riding high and it keeps setting like 52-week highs or whatever? What's your, I mean, I'm pretty sure it depends on a lot of things, but.
Yeah, so it's all about probability. And so the probability, it's kind of an inertia thing. If you go back and you look at the history of 52-week highs, what generally makes a 52-week high will make another 52-week high and another 52-week high. So what's in motion generally stays in motion. So if it's trending up, the probability that the thing that you plan in your head is that the probability is that it's going to continue to go up. So you shouldn't have a fear of continuing to buy at higher prices. The underlying piece of that is process for when you should get in, what you should risk, like what's the maximum amount you should risk, and that's it. Like when you should get in, like what triggers you to put on a buy position at that point, at that high point, and then how much should you risk, and then the rest is just letting that ride in that direction.
Nice. And so essentially what you're saying is it's kind of like two kind of like tactics operating at once. It's one thing to look at the trend, but it's also another to look at the momentum of that trend and the 52-week high and the probability of it continuing on that versus it kind of shifting against you. And if the probability is that it's continuing to hit highs, then the odds are better it'll keep getting higher, not that it's going to dip lower.
Exactly. And because the alternative would be trying to predict it when it's going to turn around.
Nice.
That's impossible. Like, I'm not in a prediction business. I don't know when anything's going to turn around. All I know is when it's in motion, the probability is that it'll continue in motion. And that's where a lot of these, a lot of these guys have been getting crushed with this, with the market now, is because they keep trying to pinpoint when they think the market's going to start falling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just keeps, you're picking up at pennies and trying to pick up pennies in front of a train. Instead of going north with the train, you're trying to stop the train and make it go the other direction. You just get crushed that way.
Interesting. Yeah, I keep hearing a lot of talks about the market crashing. And what worries me is that there's no actual, like, fundamental reasons why it would crash, except that people are saying that it's happened in the past. They're saying, oh, we're setting these highs consistently, so it has to happen. And so what you're saying is that that's not necessarily true.
I agree that at some point the market is going to turn around and it's going to be, I don't know how bad it's going to get. I don't know how low it's going to go. But it's just the market being the market. There's a pattern that exists, and when it starts to trend down, it'll continue to trend down for quite some time. But that time isn't now.
Gotcha.
Until it is trending down, it's trending up. That's really what I'm trying to say.
Nice.
Keep buying until you get that definitive signal that you need to be selling.
Yeah. One thing I like about what you do is it's all methodical. It's not what you think is going to work or what you would like to work or what you would like to happen. It's like you look at the numbers and it's very analytical. It's like there's a business to it. There's a form to it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to ask you, what's your most successful trade?
I would say that probably was a silver. This was buying stocks in terms of, like, when I just let one run. I can't even say that it was silver wheat because that was only 80%+ that I did on that. But, like, I've had some. some that
only,
and this is going to sound crazy, I've had some that have gone 300-400%.
Wow.
And but I never kind of the same process, I never held on to that. Like, yesterday's success will lull you into complacency.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never held on to, there've been so, like, ran a certain way. Just remember that Silver Wheaton company that was just being one that I held a lot longer. But my big movers have always been, they haven't, where I held them for a year. They've just been like, oh, I held this for a week or 3 weeks, and boom, 200%, 300%. Just crazy things like that. And then on the currency side, it's much different, because it's relatively easy to do. Let me preface that. Methodically, with the right psychology, right risk management, and the right foundation, it's not difficult to do 15-20% in a week. For somebody who's new to this, they're definitely not going to be able to do that, those kind of numbers. But somebody who's been doing it, that's not uncommon to do 15-20% a week. But remember that you have more risk. I'm putting on more risk than the average person.
So where do you get these ideas? Where do you find, what information do you use to kind of create these trades?
Zero, except like price. I use the price. It's the only objective. So intuitively, when we think about gas prices, when we pass the gas station, we can intuitively say, okay, gas prices are going up, gas prices are going down. Everybody intuitively does that, but that's objective information, because I can look last week, last year, last month, and see what gas prices were and use that to say, hey, gas prices have been trending down for this long, or it's been trending up. So the same thing applies to currencies, commodities, stocks, interest rates. I look at the price. That's the only objective information that you can find at one time, now and in the past, that will give you an idea if it's trending up or trending down. And that's all I use. I mean, obviously I use things like moving averages, mm-hmm, as tools to tell me, give me an idea of direction, because that smoothens out that price data. But the only thing I look at, I don't watch the news. I don't turn on TV. I don't look at the newspaper. I don't care who's the president. I don't care what's going on in some other country. None of that matters, because everything I need is already on the screen. It's just what the price is doing.
So with the price, are you kind of creating charts and patterns and looking at those? Is that one thing that you kind of implement into the price? Or is it just strictly trend lines?
It's rules around what the price is doing. So it's not necessarily pattern-driven. But using those moving averages and a few other tools, there are rules that, hey, when number one, there's a pattern. So the pattern is up, down, up, and down, up, down. And when I tell people this, they think I'm crazy. When I tell people that the key to the market is actually an emoji on the iPhone, they think I'm crazy. Like, this guy can't be serious right now. But it really is that pattern. If you can look at that pattern second by second, minute by minute, day by day, month by month, year by year, and that pattern is going to be there. If you just look and see, look at whatever company you want to look at or whatever instrument you want to look at, that pattern is the same. So that's the foundation. And then the second piece is overlaying like some moving averages to tell you when that pattern is repeating itself. The price is going to show it. And then the moving averages are going to basically help you get into the market at a highly probable time of that trade being in your favor.
Nice. And so you wrote a book called The Blackprint, right?
Yep.
Is that a part of your coaching? Is it something together or separate? How does that work?
Yeah, so the Blackprint was basically, I got tired of going into the store like Barnes & Noble. That place stressed me out. Any of the bookstores stressed me out, because it's too much. It's like going to Walmart. I go in, I know what I want, let me get that, discovery mission. But as an entrepreneur, I said to myself, wow, I mean, these authors got to be crazy to let somebody take a large percentage of their income from writing a book and then stick them on a shelf. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. And so the other piece was that the statistics, you know, people only finish 60% of the books they read. So if that's the case, then why write a book that's 300 pages? Why don't I write a book that's shorter than that, put the actionable intelligence in there, like the actionable things I want people to take action on? So I wrote a shorter book, made it only available through me, and then compounded that, like added the coaching to that to ensure that people reach a level of success. So basically the only people who have the black print are people who get the coaching.
Wow.
So like you can't, like, people can't buy it on Amazon or anything like that, but that's me saying, wait a minute, that's the way the publishing model is done now is all stupid to me. It just doesn't make sense financially. If I'm successful at something with a proven track record, why would I sell that information for $20? Mm. That just never sat well with me. And I said, it's got to be something different. So at first I started at $1,000 and then I raised the price to $5,000 because people were doing extremely well.
Wow.
That's how the Black Print came about.
Do you plan on expanding on that brand, or what's the goal with that?
Well, my goal is to help 300 people make $350,000. 300 individuals make at least $350,000 in the market, and that's gonna put me in a situation where I've helped people generate a little at $100 million. And so that's a measurable goal. Like, that's measured. Like, I want to do that. If it's bigger than that, great. But that's the number. That's the number of people. That's the number I want to hit. And that gives me something to measure myself against as well.
And it's a big enough goal where if you hit 70% of that goal, you're still achieving a significant level of success.
Well, yeah, it's me helping other people achieve that, because they get to keep, they got the skill, they get to keep the money. Because what I do is every single week I send out a trading plan to the people that I coach. Everybody gets the same. They get a trading plan from me saying, hey, here's what I'm focusing on for the week. Here's what the high probabilities are. Here's what we're going to do. And then they get that plan on Sunday. And then throughout the week, I send an update. I send alerts that say, hey, now it's that plan we talked about, it's time to execute on it. Nice. So that's just, just building a community and go.
You kind of fell out there, but it sounded like what you're saying is you build a community around what you're doing, right?
Yeah, building a community around that, and then basically sending out a trading plan to the group every single week so everybody can, basically no man left behind. Like, follow the trading plan and you'll do just fine.
Well, so you teach them and then you kind of like lead them to the water.
Exactly. Teach them first, and then once I feel like they're ready, then I give them the trading plan. They get access to the trading plan, and we just operate every single week.
That's cool. So I have two more questions for you. I know you said you don't like bookstores, but what's your favorite book?
I would say that my favorite, if I were telling people books that changed my life, wow, that's a hard one. Well, let me go with Reginald Lewis. Mm. Why should white guys have all the fun?
That's one of my favorite books too. Why do you say that?
This was a brother, man. This was a brother who in the 80s was doing billion-dollar deals.
Yeah.
In the 80s. And, beat all the odds. For what it's worth, quote-unquote, finessed his way in the Harvard. and started doing deals, said he had to get on the other side of the table, like, hey, I'm an attorney now, but I need to get on the other side of the table because I'm seeing how much money these people are making. I mean, know, man. That's the only book that brought me to tears at the end, you know. And I won't spoil people by telling them how it ended, but it's the only book ever that has brought me to tears where I could identify, like, oh, this is crazy. This is just a phenomenal, true story.
I know I like the Reginald Lewis story, but I also like other similar stories that exist out there, because there's a lot of, and I always tell people this, but there's always been, no matter what the era was, a successful African-American person out there making money in business and finance, whether it's Jeremiah Wright, right, whether it's A.G. Gaston, whether it's H.R. Russell, they're all out there. We just have to find them. But I know one thing that I really like about that Reginald Lewis story is how he got into buying businesses, and that's how he really generated his wealth. And you told me that you bought a business before, right?
Yeah, that was, I bought that company after I finished that book. true story. I bought that company after I finished that book. I was 24, going into 25.
Wow.
And I just said to myself, same thing, I got to get on the other side of the table. So I was either going to buy a company or start a company. Ended up finding a company that, well, I called it, you had to get a bond to own one of those companies, a mortgage company, a finance company. And so I called my insurance agent, told her what I was looking to do. She said, hey, I know somebody looking to sell one. I mean, that just doesn't happen every day. And I said, well, set up a meeting. And we set up a meeting, and, you know, the rest is history from there. Like, it's just one of those crazy, I don't know what to say, man. It was, it has been one of the best decisions in my life.
And do you still,
from a business perspective,
do you still own that company, or what happened with that?
Merging the production with a larger, with the company that I left, I ended up merging the production with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept the shell, like I kept the holding company. I still use that. I kept the holding company that bought assets of that company. Does that make sense?
So they bought you out?
Well, we it was more of an aqua. It wasn't that they sent me a check for XYZ amount of money. It was just more of an acquisition of everything that was incorporated in there, and then there was money, but it wasn't like, hey, we're buying you completely out.
Mm-hmm.
But I stayed on and worked with that company for a couple of years, and then I always kept it to this company, which I then used to manage money in.
Interesting. So last question, this is the Millionaire Podcast, and so I want to know, what does wealth mean to you?
Man, the ultimate thing, you go back to Tim Ferriss' book, right, and he talks about the new rich, and I was just in this place called Cat Island in the Bahamas. It's very remote, people can only get there by boat and plane, small plane, and boat, no cruise ships or anything like that allowed. And it just was a reminder, man, that, I mean, this was, just picked up and left. The time is the most time. Everybody really, the people who want money are really wanting time. The majority of people are wanting that time to spend with their family.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you need money to do that, but they're wanting to spend time with their family, time doing the things they love. Time being the places they want to be without any repercussions, right? So for me, true wealth is time. That's the only thing. And money is just a tool to help me achieve that. Because, you know, for what it's worth, other than it being a point of bartering, it's not really real.
I agree. It's so funny.
You know, it's created.
Exactly. It's like something they just kind of created and assigned value to.
Yeah. Yeah. And now people are basically killing themselves to get it by working 100 hours a week or whatever the case. But the smart, really, really smart people are always putting that money to work to create more. I mean, people who love what they do and they work 100 hours a week, I mean, they're not really working. But there are also people who are trying to just get money to thinking that it's going to be the end, like it's going to be the thing that sets them free, but they just keep diving deeper into that hole of more and more and more. They keep buying more stuff, but they need more money. I mean, really what you want is time.
Interesting. So, very cool. I appreciate you making it onto the podcast, making time, taking time out of your vacation schedule to talk to the people. I know they got something good out of this conversation. It was a lot of high-quality, potent information. If they are interested in your coaching or just to get in touch with you, where can they reach you?
Just alpickett.com, alpickett.com. And my email address is al@blackprintnewrules.com. And or you can reach me on the Instagram. You know, just shoot me a direct message. Mr. Al Pickett, two T's.
There's power in the DMs, people. So this has been Todd Millionaire, also known as Charles Oglesby, on another edition of the Todd Capital Millionaire Podcast. If you are interested in joining our investment club, please email me at info@capitaltodd.com. Signing off.